The following podcast has been recorded under the influence of alcohol. While not intentionally offensive, things are said, feelings may be hurt, and f***s are not given. Clearly, it's the beer's fault.
The Good Beer Bad Movie Night Podcast.
Welcome to episode 35 of Good Beer, Bad Movie Night, the podcast dedicated to movies of questionable quality and the frosty adult beverages that help make them tolerable. Tonight's feature presentation is the 1983 sci-fi fantasy romantic comedy, Crawl. Romantic comedy, Pete?
That's
actually Trey.
Yeah, I'm reading from a script, folks, because Pete would normally be reading this, but he apparently has lost his voice.
I'm a little...
You look a little withering.
Unavailable right now.
We have to save the pipes for when they're needed.
I think he's faking it just to make us look like idiots.
This is a lot of fun, let me tell you.
But... This is actually my birthday month.
That's right.
Yay. And so I put it up for a vote. So Krull it is. And I was really excited about this because I really love Krull.
Trey voted for it three times.
Oh, pad in the ballot box.
I don't think I meant to. I was like, oh, I don't think it took it. Oh, I don't think it took it. Oh, I think it did take it. I think it took it all three times. Yay. Okay, that's fine.
It's all right. I never vote, so.
Aw.
She wants to take no credit or blame.
She wants to be completely impartial.
Yep. Impartial, that's a word.
It is a word.
I don't think that's the one I would apply to it.
Guilt-free, that's what you want.
Ding, ding, ding. It's ding. Since it's your birthday, Dave,
yes.
You're going to do the six-minute synopsis.
Yes, for that is correct.
Lovely piece of filmmaking.
Yes, the time-honored family classic. So I will start off with the six-minute synopsis, where we take 6 minutes to summarize the movie. We'll then take a quick break and come back with this evening's choice of beverage, which will lead into our discussion of the film. Finally, we wrap up the evening with our six-pack rating as we let you know just how drunk you may have to be to enjoy this film. But before we attend any of that nonsense, let's say hello to everyone. I am Dave. This is my fault this month. And to my left, I have Kathleen.
Hello.
And to her left, we have Troy.
Hello.
And then if he can actually manage to vocalize, we have Pete.
Good day.
Pete is having a little trouble, folks. He's, for about a week now, he's been unable to speak, which is...
To the great joy of my wife.
Yes. So I guess without further ado...
This one was, for me, not as painful. It was more stupid than painful.
Stupid. Also by design.
So now the 6 minute synopsis must be pretty close to 6 minutes anymore because we do have...
Consequences.
Yes, consequences.
Yeah.
Not everyone has to lower their voices to my level.
I was trying to make was you that just welcome dramatic? And accepted.
Thank you so much.
In our raspiest episode ever.
Are you ready?
Yep, I'm ready. Just give me a count.
All right. 3, 2, 1, go.
We open in space, a black field dotted with stars and a single bright flare of light in the center. A haunting angelic choir sings while a fanfare of horns calls from the distance. Out of the blackness, a spinning five-pointed cross hurls across the camera, rolling gracefully and back and forth, crossing between the screen to reveal the title Krull, shimmering in blue as a fanfare explodes in a heroic call to adventure. The bright swashbuckling score sweeps us through the credit crawl, while off in the darkness a huge mountain-like object slowly roars by, approaching the nearby planet of blue and green. The object comes to a violent rest on the lush surface of the planet, its shuddering impact rending the very ground itself. It is the Black Fortress, home of the Beast and his slayers. As hordes of slayers issue forth from Black Fortress in their horned, beetle-like armor, we hear the voice of Inir, a wise old prophet or wizard or something. He narrates... This it was given to me to know, that many worlds have been enslaved by the Beast and his army, the Slayers, and this too was given to me to know, that the Beast would come forth to our world, the world of Krull, and his Black Fortress would be seen in the land, that the smoke of burning villages would darken the sky, and the skies, and the, sorry, cries of the dying echo through the desert valleys. But one thing I cannot know, whether the prophecy be true, that the girl of ancient name shall become a queen, and that she shall choose a king, and that together they shall rule our world, and that their son shall rule the galaxy. Anyway, we slowly dissolve to a shining white castle, where the beautiful fiery-haired Princess Lyssa watches impatiently from one of the battlements for Colwyn, her beloved betrothed. Her father, King Earing surmises Colwyn's delay is likely due to the Slayers controlling all the passages, and expresses anger and resentment that at her marrying the son of his ancient enemy. Lyssa explains the alliance formed by this marriage is necessary to fight the beast, which supersedes their stupid ancient rivalry. She praises Colwyn as a great fighter, to which the father responds, "Good fighters make bad husbands," whatever. Finally, Colwyn and his father's entourage arrive, having suffered tremendous casualties fighting the Slayers on the journey. The kings exchange unpleasantries while Colwyn and Lyssa make out. Meanwhile, unbeknownst to them but known to us, an army of Slayers approaches the castle. Ynir, the old wizard prophet guy, watches as they thunder past. That evening, or whatever, during the wedding ceremony, both kings declare the kingdoms are no more, and that the single kingdom exists under their children. The ceremony continues, and Colwyn extinguishes a torch in a basin of water, declaring that the fire will not return except in the hand of the woman he chooses as his wife. Lyssa dips her hand into the basin and pulls the fire from the water with her bare fucking hand, declares that she gives the fire only to the man she chooses as her husband. Suddenly, the armored Slayers storm the castle, climbing the walls and slaying, I guess. As Lyssa is secreted away through hidden passages, Colwyn and both kings attempt to hold off the invaders. During the fray, both kings are slain by the Slayers. And Colwyn continues fighting, and we discover where Slayers are slain. Their heads crack open with a horrible shriek and disgusting knots of organs, presumably the true form, slide out of the helmet to burrow underground. It's kind of cool. While attempting to escape, Lyssa's guards are slain by the Slayers. She cries out to Colwyn, who, while attempting to rescue her beloved almost wife, is wounded and knocked unconscious. The Slayers capture Lyssa, taking her back to the Black Fortress. The next morning, the old man, Ynir, removes the royal amulet, a necklace with a five-pointed cross with curved arms, from Colwyn's father's slain corpse. He then nurses the wounded Colwyn back to health and hands him the amulet. Colwyn weeps at the loss of both his father and his bride, and Ynir admonishes him for being weak, childish, because apparently expressing sadness is unacceptable. After squirting a few tears, Ynir explains Lyssa is in the hands of the beast in his Black Fortress, which moves to a new place every sunrise, one day in the mountains, the next in the desert, and so on, and that to fight him, he'll need the power of the glaive, found in a cave on the highest peak and retrievable only by the right man. Colwyn ascends to the mountain alone, finding the glaive in a bubbling pool of hot lava, since he is indeed the right man. Colwyn reaches into the lava unharmed and extracts the glaive, which is revealed to be a golden five-pointed cross tip with razor sharp, retractable blades, like an awesome giant golden throwing star. And ever since the first time I saw this movie, I've never stopped wanting one. Now, armed with the most awesome golden boomerang ever, Colwyn and Ynir travel to the blind Emerald Seer, who can help them find the next location of the Black Fortress. During their travels, they're nearly dive-bombed by a hilariously inept magician named Ergo the Magnificent, who, attempting to transform them into a goose, ends up transforming himself to a goose. All butthurt is spelled in work. He tries to leave in a huff, but a few feet into the woods, he encounters an 8-foot-tall cyclops staring at him quietly. Ergo does a quick turnaround face and leaves with Colwyn and Ynir. Back at the Black Fortress, the beast reveals that he wishes to marry Lyssa and that they'll rule this world together, whatever. That's gross. Meanwhile, Corwin, Ynir, and Ergo, and whatever, take a shortcut through a rocky pass and are waylaid by a band of robbers, including a young Liam Neeson, young Robbie Coltrane. Colwyn identifies them as escaped prisoners and offers to unlock their manacles in exchange for joining him on his quest. All agree except for the leader, Torkoal, who insists on wearing his manacles until the job's done. Continuing their quest, Ergo, the dipshit magician, nearly slain by a Slayer, when the Cyclops, who had been following him, slays the Slayer with his awesome spear. Ynir explains the Cyclops belongs to an ancient race of sad creatures who made a bargain with the beast, exchanging one of their eyes to be able to see their own death. They reach the blind seer. He gets in the titch, the boy assistant, who shows the Black Fortress a giant emerald, but the beast reaches I misread all this stuff. The Emerald Seer gets killed, is replaced by a changeling, blah blah blah. Crossing the swamp, they're accosted by Slayers, join the Cyclops. They're immediately caught to quicksand during all the confusion and changeling, blah, blah, blah. Okay, anyway, the group presses on while Rell the Cyclops stays behind to make sure they're not followed. The group continues to the swamp while Rell discovers the body of the seer. He hauls his ass past toward the group and hurls his pig sticker, killing a changeling. Now, they have no way to find the fortress, so they go to the Widow of the Web. It's a sorceress and Ynir's former lover, imprisoned in a chamber of the crystal spider's enormous web. Cut to the Black Fortress. Hideous Beast does his best to seduce Lyssa. Doesn't really work. Back at the web, Ynir finds out the location, and he makes it back to the group to tell him, "It's in the Iron Desert, fuckers," before he dies. needing to travel 1,000 leagues to the Iron Desert, they ride fiery mares, which are apparently flying Clydesdales with fire coming out of their hooves. The group reaches the Black Fortress, and they try to climb. The Slayers attack them, and the sun's coming up. The fortress is about to disappear, and before the door closes, Rell shows up, the Cyclops, and he holds one of the doors open long enough for them to get in there, and then he gets crushed to death. Group separates, and they wander around the fortress, which looks like a giant Georgia O'Keeffe painting, and then They come to the heart of the fortress, and Colin finally gets to use the glaive and cutting a needlessly irregular hole in the dome and finding Lyssa. When they're attacked by the beast, Colwyn embeds the glaive into the beast's chest. The beast pursues the now defenseless Colwyn and Lyssa, where they realize together they're too powerful for the beast to defeat the man. And man, this movie sucks worse than I realized. Lyssa opens her hand to reveal that she reveals the fire and gives it to Colwyn. Colwyn uses the fire in his hand as a flamethrower, kills the beast. The fortress is destroyed, and then they all have a great moment and live happily after, which would be the end.
You needed an extra 41 seconds.
Uh-oh.
This worked so much better when I tried it before.
I thought for sure you were going to go about halfway through and you said, you know what? Fuck it. This movie is stupid.
That would not be in the spirit.
They storm the castle. Happy ending.
I actually thought that that's what you were going to do too, because you spent so long on the very beginning. Right.
And then
you got to the you started to go in like, and then this happens and blah, blah, blah. And then this happens and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, he's going to blah, blah, blah.
I mean, all of these are very accurate descriptions of the movie. The blah, blah, blah part, for sure.
For sure.
So we've decided that we have been abusing the 6-minute synopsis, making it more like a 7, 8, 12-pack synopsis. So put a stop to it.
He had a whole gallon one time.
Yeah.
It's true.
To put a stop to it, we have decided that we were going to punish ourselves when we did poorly in the 6-minute synopsizing.
Oh, I did poorly. And I did poorly.
I did poorly.
And we decided that we were going to make ourselves sing to all of you fine people.
Yeah, well, it's my birthday and I fucked up, so I get to choose a song.
Yep.
I don't think we're prepared with songs. Oh, shit, those are songs, aren't they?
Yeah.
Damn it. My birthday and everything.
Happy fucking birthday, Dave.
It feels mean to make you do it on your birthday.
All right, I sing this fucking song. All right.
The song that you wrote.
Yeah, I know that. I didn't think I was going to sing it. Okay. So apparently I can't make it within 6 minutes. So I eat poo. I eat poo. Look at me. I drink pee. I tie my armpit hair with a bow. I don't know how long the synopsis should go. Next time I'll get all my ducks in a row. I eat poo. I don't feel great about doing the inaugural punishment for not hitting the 6-minute synopsis.
That's funny. I feel brilliant. Great about it.
Absolutely brilliant.
Good. Good. I'm glad.
Yeah.
Hey, Dave, did you bring some beer for us to drink?
Yes.
Yes.
Then we should probably do that next.
All right. Let's go get a beer.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Ooh, that's pretty.
All right. So this is The Banshee and the Beast.
I love that movie.
Be our guest. Be our...
Title of my autobiography.
So Banshee...
Is it any wonder that I married her, guys?
No.
Ew.
I don't think she's going to drink that much.
Yeah, no. Not remotely. Here, trade me.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so Banshee and the Beast?
Yes.
Oh, clown shoes. Cool.
Oh, clown shoes.
Yes. This is Banshee and the Beast.
Is that Cleveland?
It is out of Cleveland.
I thought so.
Oh, no, wait. Banshee the Beast. No, I'm sorry. Banshee the Beast is actually out of Massachusetts. It's a subsidiary of Harpoon. On the back of the bottle, it says, the Beast is back, but is not too pleased with his new companion, the Banshee. She lets them into a mysterious Irish wilderness, and now they're becoming translucent creepy, but in a most peculiar fashion. This Imperial Stout is a powerful pairing in its own right, with robust dark malt flavors and the rich and complex notes of Irish whiskey and bourbon barrel aging.
It smells good.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is nice. This is going to be nice.
This is a shitload of beer.
And what's the ABV?
Oh, the ABV on this is 10.25.
Oh,
so 10 and a quarter.
Oh, no.
And there's no IBU statement on it. So it's going to be pretty hot.
It's not really that hot. No, it's got a lot of alcohol in the mouth, but like not that burn go down.
Well, the alcohol should be in the mouth.
Well,
better than on the floor.
Breathe out.
Oh yeah.
I've been administering my alcohol as eye drops.
Oh.
I'm trying to avoid the whole in like absorbing it rectally thing, which is the joke I always make. I'm trying to turn over a new leaf here and not do as many butt jokes. Did I already do butt jokes?
No.
Hi. Oh, okay. Who are you and what did you do with Dave?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Fuck you.
No, I really am trying to not do as many butt jokes. I think it's a little tired. Let's see how long I last.
So your butt is tired?
Because you've been running through my mind all day. Does that work?
I don't think that works. Okay.
Yeah, maybe scooting.
It is very malty.
Super malty. Mm-hmm. Would you describe it as a bomb?
Malt bomb? No, I don't think it's a malt bomb. It's
a malt grenade?
I wouldn't also call it balanced. It is a lot of dark sugar.
Molasses.
Dark molasses. Raisin. Not date, definitely raisin. Mm-hmm. This is a sharing beer. Yes. One for the ABV alone, but it's such an intense flavor that this is all I want. I mean, I got
three fingers there.
Almost three fingers here, yeah. Kathleen's like, I don't even want half a finger.
Yeah, great. Trying to Those stop are some doing awesome.
Yes, joke. I'm trying to not do a butt joke with the three fingers.
What? Tell me what this is again. It's a...
It is an American Imperial Stout.
An Imperial Stout, okay. So not one of my favorite types. Yes. The whiskey aspect to it, I definitely can taste that, which is a little bit saving the flavor for me because I enjoy that a little more than an Imperial Stout just kind of on its own. So the mix of those two together makes a flavor that I find enjoyable, but it's too dark, it's too heavy, it's too raisiny. Mm-hmm. It's not something that, I had the smallest portion and I've had three sips of it and I'm done.
That's okay.
Yeah. Now, this would be fantastic in beer bread. The darker and maltier the beer, the alcohol mix that you put into a beer bread, the better the bread is, and it would be so good.
Jody, I made a chocolate stout early on in my brewing career, and I made it with Ghirardelli baking chocolate.
Oh yeah.
And it was my God, it was thick. Like a spoon could almost stand up in it. That's how thick it was. And that's just the amount of shit that was in it when Dave and I were brewing
right.
A different Dave.
Right.
So
I think I'd remember that. I really, yeah. It's a different Dave. I really
probably, right. So, and I shared some, cause I know Jody likes stouts, and I shared some with her and it's like, here's my zombie chocolate stout. And she goes, boy, this would make great bread. And I almost cried. I'm like, this is the best beer we've ever made. And you tell me you can make fucking bread out of it.
Yeah. But when you're making a beer bread, it's really a very good compliment. Cause the... The darker and more robust the beer is, the better the bread is going to be.
I get that. It just, at the time. I'm
I would have sad puppy cried too if I was you, but from her point of view, can understand why.
It was like the third beer we had made and we finally went, wow, we're pretty good at this.
This is the great thing to not taste in something else.
Yes, exactly.
To each their own.
I'm enjoying this. It's just, it's a lot.
It's pretty creamy in some respects for something that's so hot. Like all that flavor's in the mouth. You swallow it and it's like
why are you both laughing?
Because where else do you taste things?
I know. This next beer we're having, all the flavor's in the armpit.
I just mean you don't feel it when it goes.
I know
down.
What you mean, Charlie.
Thank you, Pete.
You're welcome. He's my buddy.
That's why it's funny.
But yeah, I was actually, I got this from our friends at Perfect Pour.
Oh, right.
Right off Sawmill Road, in case any of our listeners are in the Columbus area.
It is the finest bottle store to open in the last decade, I think.
I really enjoy that place.
I can't think of a better place.
I walked in, and they're those kinds of people who, if you give them a tasting note, they'll find beers for you.
We've gotten things from them before, right?
Yes. As an example of their expertise, I went in there, and I said, I am looking for beers with the word beast in the label or some kind of monster in the label, since in the movie there's a creature called the Beast. And they came up with no fewer than four, just like snap, snap, right off the top. I'm like, oh, okay.
I love people who are good at their job.
Yeah. True. And these guys definitely know what they're doing.
Okay, so this movie. I'll be honest with you. Even pre-Delano, this is not the worst movie that we've watched.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
It was silly and ridiculous. We were texting with my cousin, who kind of like he could be pretty easily a guest on this podcast and and keep up with you guys with the ridiculousness of these movies. Troy was like, oh, we're watching Krull. And he goes, oh, yeah, the movie where Star Wars and Lord of the Rings had a baby. And I was like, yes, a very, even though the movie's not very long, a very long, takes forever to get to the fucking point baby. Because you're, oh, my God, like pretty scenery. And they obviously paid a lot to land wherever the hell they were filming because they wanted to film every inch of New Zealand, I guess. I just assume that every time they're in some sort of area like that, that they're filming in New Zealand.
I don't think New Zealand had been discovered by 1983. Well, by Hollywood.
Disagree with you.
By Hollywood, I mean.
I had a little problem with this movie and the fact that I was supposed to not root for the Slayer. Like that hurt me as a Buffy fan. Me a lot. That I was like, oh, the Slayer's the bad guy. No, I don't. That's hurtful.
Oh, the Slayers, the army of bad guys.
Yeah, the Slayers who slay things
and who also got slain.
Yes, they were slain.
So the Slayer, he himself is slain. I don't know.
Yeah. So I didn't love that. I mean, they were creepy and gross, and the thing bursting out of their head, very Dalek style, when the machine died, the, you know, gross worm went back into the earth, which was nasty. But my other issue with this movie was that at the wedding scene, I was like, well, just have her shoot fire out of her hand and everybody, movie's done. And that's literally how it fucking ended. Oh, I was just like, why did I just sit through all this?
Well, the boy had to do the fire shooting.
Right.
Yeah, she couldn't do it herself. She had to hand it off. So
in 1983, the girls can't possibly.
This is my response to that.
She's flipping us all off.
It's a single bird.
Not
it's
you. The movie.
The movie. Oh, okay. That is a big old fuck you movie, I think. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So maybe there should be a Krull remake, except maybe reverse that. Or
that could be cool. Also, everybody needs a better name.
Is reverse Krull a position?
I don't know, but it sounds like you'd get rug burns.
Really hurt your glaive.
Ow, yes. My glaive.
It was at the point that they were searching for the glaive that I said to Troy, I was like, what is this thing called?
The glaive. It means to welch on a bet.
Yes. He was channeling his inner to blaive. So yeah.
I'm not sure if I never mind.
It's a Princess Bride.
Princess Bride.
So yeah, but at that point then, too, I also was like, can we turn on the closed captioning so I can have half a chance of understanding what anybody's name is? I literally didn't know why the movie was called Krull till today. I thought that was the main guy's name. Like, I was like, oh, what's his name? Krullin or something? Okay. Oh, he got knocked out. I literally wrote in my notes, oh, he's probably going to come to and not really remember who he is. And so they're just going to call him Krull. And then he's going to meet up with the girl at the end. And she's going to be like, Krullin. And he's like, yes, that's who I am. And I was like,
no, I remember.
No, I guess that's not
what
this movie's
you didn't
about.
Know how the movie totally was going to end then.
It's pretty fucking close. So,
she predicted as much as she cared about.
Right. Well, here's the thing. I didn't predict that's how the movie was going to end. That was my suggestion at the beginning of the movie. Just blowtorch these people and let's be done with it. And then that's what they did.
Yeah, I'm actually growing up, I didn't realize what Krull was either. Like, is Krull the weird golden boomerang, which I still want?
Right.
No, that's the glaive.
Yeah. Is it the monster? Is that the Krull? Like, no. Is the guy? No, it's not Krull. What the fuck is the Krull? Eventually, when I turned like 10 and watched again, like, oh, yeah, okay. That's the place is called Krull.
The planet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, like, it was a weird mix of sci-fi and fantasy, which could have worked, but totally, totally didn't. Well, almost totally didn't.
I mean, it's a very sword and sandal story. It also reminded me of the movie that I've never seen, but you guys keep referencing, The Magnificent Seven, where they gather all the people.
Yes.
Like, I was like, oh, first we have to get, you know, we start with the groom, which is what I called him through half of my notes, because I literally had no idea what his name was. So we have the groom, and the groom picks up the old guy, and then they get
The silly guy.
And then they get the seer. And then they get
the cyclones.
They get the
bandits, the robbers.
The bandits. And then they get the seer. And then they get the cyclops. And then it's like once they assemble their group, then they start killing them one at a time. I was like, why did I just watch all of this where they put everybody together to slash them all down?
Because they had to help. They had to get the
guy
there.
Right, but they had like all those extra bandits. It was like, just kill off all the red shirts.
Yeah,
like, and then your named, ridiculous, but named characters all survive the movie. Nope, that's not what happens either.
Even as a kid, when I saw this movie and I saw all these extra bandits, I'm like, oh, they're all dead. Like, I know cannon fodder when I see it.
They haven't given that guy a name yet. He's going to die.
He died.
Yeah, except it feels like nobody had a name until literally when they were dying. There's like, I didn't know Liam Neeson's name until he was dying. I didn't know Robbie Coltrane's name. I still don't even think I know what his name is.
Yeah, I don't remember.
So, yeah, Pete Postlethwaite, I never got his name, and he survives.
That's not Pete Postlethwaite.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
I looked it up. Yeah, it is.
No way.
Yeah. The lead bandit guy who lives is totally the guy who is the father in the movie In the Name of the Father and is Mr. Kobayashi in Usual Suspects. Yeah. Okay, go ahead and look it up. There's a reason Google's voice is a lady.
I am going to look this up. I'll bet you a dollar.
You can bet me a dollar. I looked it up last night when we watched this, or Thursday. Yeah, wait, Wednesday? Whatever the fuck day we watched this movie.
Torquil, played by Alan Armstrong.
No. Then we're not talking about the same person.
Head Bandit?
Head Bandit, Torkoal.
Kobayashi is the guy I'm talking about.
I don't think Pete Postlethwaite is even in this movie.
Yes, he is. I totally looked it up.
I don't know.
Now we're all on our phones.
100 pennies coming my way.
This is a great.
I will throw them at you one at a time.
I'm so glad I don't have a voice right now.
Look this up. Oh, I have Jurassic Park.
No, I mean, no, the guy who's played the bandit leader, he was also in Braveheart. He was one of the Scottish lords. He was in Downton Abbey as one of the butlers, like the cranky old butler in Scotland.
He's correct. There's no Pete Postlethwaite.
No, I looked it up. I showed it to you.
He does look like Postlethwaite.
He does.
I'm finding the thing I looked at. I am, because I'm telling you, I literally 100% looked
it up. There
was
a thing that said the thing, but it's the wrong thing.
I have no doubt that you read something that said that he was in it.
Yes.
It probably says, boy, does Alan, what's-his-face, look like Pete Postlethwaite in this movie a lot. Because I totally just went with it. I was like, yeah, that totally is that dude.
Well, I never believe you believing it, because you never know who anybody is.
Yeah, no.
Well done, sir.
Oh, I say that all the time, that he only knows my name because I live with him.
Yeah.
Budget for this movie was...
a lot.
Yeah.
It was a huge budget.
I think they thought that they had a hit, like even to the point where it wasn't...
If it wasn't so damn boring, I would imagine it could have been...
it wasn't even boring.
Oh my God.
I had a hard time. Okay, because... fuck Crackle.
Oh,
that's
yes.
all I gotta say.
That was a big part of what made this miserable for us.
We watched this movie on Crackle, which is a streaming service if you're not aware of it.
Sony streaming service.
And so what they do is they will take a movie and they will put ads in.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So we watched the movie, and the movie is 1 hour, or it's 121 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
The movie we watched was two hours. That means that there was 39 minutes of commercials interspersed.
Are you sure you're doing your math right?
Yeah, 39 minutes.
121 minutes is 2 hours and 1 minute.
Wait.
So you must have been watching it for a lot longer than that.
Right.
We were.
Probably like an extra 30 minutes of commercials. But yeah, the budget for this movie was like $30 million, which in 1983 money was like $6 billion or something.
Yeah.
I might not be getting my exchange
this
right.
This thing on IMDb is saying that it's $47 million estimated. And the opening weekend it made $5
Ouch.
Million.
Ouch.
It's like, oh, stab.
Yeah, the total box office was 16.9.
Yeah. Ew.
So it didn't make, it made about half of its.
You really got to have a bitchin' story when you go with a bunch of unknowns.
Yes.
Like Star Wars, who had all unknowns.
Yeah.
Except for Sir Alec Guinness.
Right.
And this had nobody in it at the time. Like, nobody.
Yeah. I wondered if the first Lyssa that was caught in the spider web, if she was a somebody... Because when they run the credits at the like at the beginning, when they're like saying the names of the people that are in it or whatever, it says and with, and then it's her name, which usually is some kind of indicator that we paid her the most, which usually is some kind of indicator that the person is important. But I didn't recognize her, and I'm not entirely sure who I was supposed to recognize, because clearly. The old hag that was a lot of makeup, and then the young girl in the thing. It's like, is that really who this is? Or is that just somebody else? Like, I don't know what this person's supposed to look like.
I know that the guy, the old guy, Ynir, played by Freddie Jones, I think, like, he's been in stuff. Like, he was in, I think he was in The Elephant Man.
Yeah, I mean, his name seemed somewhat familiar. So yeah. I did shout Liam Neeson and Robbie Coltrane when I saw that come through the thing. I wrote down in my notes about, I was calling him Hagrid at one point when I was watching
Hagrid with
it.
A buzz cut?
Yes, Hagrid with a buzz cut.
This, admittedly, I was really happy when this movie got chosen because I loved the movie from my childhood and I kind of wanted to revisit it and see if I still loved it. And I still kind of do love this movie. It took me a little, because I watched the movie twice. The first time I was like, yay, Krull. And then when I watched it a second time to look at it more critically, I'm like, eh, Krull.
I mean, it's not the worst story. Like,
what's a classic, rescue the princess story? Yeah.
Yes. And I do like the idea of like two kingdoms and they're coming together as one to like fight this big bad. And like, I thought that was kind of cool. And
it gave it depth. And I mean, it gave it some, you know, some dimension.
It gave you some reason to care about these people, at least a little bit. But just, my God, when they finally made it to the seer. And then he couldn't fucking do it. And then they had to go to the swamp of the emerald thing. I was like, how many places do we have to go just to figure out how to get to the place that moves every day? Like, I was like, that is stupid.
Well, first we had to get the glaive, which...
which was pointless.
Exactly. It was a really boring moment because he had to, like, climb a mountain. And we watched him climb the mountain
for about
15 minutes of climbing a mountain.
Yes.
And then he goes in and he gets... And the glaive is in, like,
a river of lava.
And he, like, reaches his hand in. And Kathleen's like, how the fuck can these guys not beat up on the beast? They're just reaching into lava. I'm like, I don't know.
Right. I was like, okay, she pulled fire out of water, and this guy is lava-proof. How do they die? Like, well, I don't understand.
The Adventures of Firehand and Lava-Proof.
Right.
The Man of the Prophecy or whatever. But it doesn't really land. Because here, I'm going to go climb this mountain for 15 screen minutes.
Yeah.
And then pull this, what is essentially like a fancy candelabra out of out of a lava thing. And then you don't see it again until the very end.
Yes. And it's literally used to puncture a sheet. Yeah. Like, I was like, I didn't understand. And this I completely blame on the filmmaker. So when he first throws... the
glaive.
Ninja boomerang at the dome sheet that she's trapped in. He throws it and the camera is facing him. So all you see is his hand extended like, and he keeps just holding his hand out. And I was like, put your arm down. Like, what are you doing? I did not understand until later when he's throwing it again to attack the beast that he's like controlling it with his hand, because the way they have him doing it the first time, his arm's just like up in the air like, I threw it.
That was the reason you're confused, is because at the very beginning of the film, the old dude, well, whoever cares, said, don't use it yet, only use it when you need to. So we never got that training montage as we did in Star Wars, where Skywalker is trying to lift the rocks or use the lightsaber or something like that. So all of a sudden he has these powers and we're like, what the fuck is going on here? Where did you get those powers? How did you learn to use them? Why would you even think about having powers? I mean, you're going to throw this shuriken. Thank you.
Shuriken!
At a stone goblin and then you're like, peace out.
Okay, only use it when you need it. Well, he got attacked at least half a dozen times between when he found it and when he fought the beast. So, like, maybe you need it at some point then.
Yes. Could have been chopping heads off the whole time.
And you're like, I could have been doing this the whole time?
When the guy first says that to him, somehow I must have blinked with my ears again. I thought
that
he said... you could only use it once. So after he chopped through the dome to get her out, when he threw it again, I was like, what the fuck happened? You can only use it once. Why haven't you been using it the whole time then? Troy was like, no, he said you could only use it when he needs it. I'm like, so when they were being attacked in the forest, he didn't need it?
And in the swamp, and when they were climbing the fortress.
Right. Now, I did like the one bit of like kind of cool, because the effects in this did not age well. And it completely reminded me of Lord of the Rings, is when the Slayers are attacking the castle during the wedding and they're like coming right up to the building and like six of them just like,
Spider-Manning
up the building. Yeah. Like, they're barely touching it. I mean, clearly they're on like a pulley that just went and like pulled them up, but it still looked cool. Like, I was like, that was pretty good. Like, that was pretty cool. I kind of like that, but... That was the last effect that I thought was cool, because the rest of them just
you don't lose any marks for that. It's okay.
I liked the effects.
Yeah.
I liked the costumes and I liked the creature effects.
Costumes.
No, meaning like the armor from the for the slayers looked super cool. I thought that like the changeling that turned into the seer. That used to give me nightmares when I was a kid.
That was gross.
Yeah, well, first, like when the seer has his hand on, oh, sorry, the changeling as the seer has his hand on Colwyn's shoulder.
Yes.
And then Torquil, the bandit king, is like, no, I'll guide the seer, and trades places with Colwyn. And like you see the seer's eyes open up and they're like black.
Yeah.
Like the scleral contact lenses, they're just pure black, no whites, no anything. And like that gave me nightmares as a kid for a long time.
Yeah.
I see that. Yeah.
And then when he finally gets killed, when Rell, the Cyclops, starts hauling ass through the swamp.
That dude can run.
Yeah. That dude's like 7 feet tall.
I know. He's super tall. And when that's not the second time
that Cyclops mask
that he had to like run a significant distance to save their asses. I was like, okay, like, quit staying behind, dude.
Yeah, all that dude does is stay behind and save their asses.
Yes.
That's the same guy that played the giant on Hawk the Slayer, by the way.
Oh, was it really?
Really?
Yeah.
Nice.
Ooh, that's a pretty cool callback.
I didn't make that connection. That's great.
But Rell is my favorite character. Because like he hangs behind, saves somebody, hangs behind, saves somebody again, hangs behind, saves somebody again. Finally, when he has to hang behind because that's what's time to die.
Yeah. Right.
He still goes and saves their asses a last time before he's finally crushed to death.
Oh, this, yeah.
Yeah, that also kind of gave me nervous.
Was that explained why he had to stay behind? I didn't catch that.
If he doesn't stay and die the way he foresees himself dying, when he does die, which will be pretty soon, like it's incredibly painful.
Like being crushed by a door.
Yeah, like being crushed by a door. Yeah. to save everybody else's
right.
ass.
Yeah.
Or you get a painful death.
Right. That wasn't clear to me. I'm like, what are you doing? I don't get it. And everyone was cool with it. Like, he had shared it with everyone off camera or something.
When he runs up the mountain again and saves them and ends up being squished by the door or whatever, I was like, well, I don't understand why you stayed behind. I thought you were going to stay back there and die. Like, why are you here now?
Right.
So I just didn't even put it together. Costuming-wise with the characters, I was not in love with the groom's outfit. I kept calling it the Steven Tyler Lululemon leggings.
Well, I thought he looked like a mixture of a Shakespearean actor and a pirate.
Right. That's totally what it was. And it was because those leggings had that like leather striping in them. Like,
and he had the bloused shirt with the open V down to his belly button.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was a little...
He should just run around with that shirt on the whole time.
He did sport a couple of nice little, speaking of six pack there, when he was wounded. I was like, oh, yeah,
that was attractive.
But then the overacting was so just ridiculous.
My biggest problem with the special effects was all the animation.
Like the stop motion?
No. So two swords hit, and instead of seeing physical sparks, you see pink spots.
Oh, rotoscope spots.
Right.
Electric.
I get that, you know, plastic swords, hitting plastic swords aren't going to create any sort of spark, but I'm pretty sure you can put something on those plastic, as some sort of a cap to have. And that, I don't know if they were trying to...
I call them generic
jump into the Star
lightsabers.
Wars sort of thing, where there's with the laser swords and everything was animated there. It got tiring to me when they're in this big battle and you see blue and yellow and pink sparks all over the place that are clearly drawn in.
Which was supposed to be, I guess, something that was like mystical or whatever about the Slayers. Those battles were where you got the electricity fighting from or whatever.
Yeah, and those lances they had that they would shoot out one end and then they turn it around and use the other end as a sword.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of cool.
That's cool.
That's kind of a cool weapon, yeah.
The armor of the Slayers and the look of the beast, especially the beast, I always loved. Like the red eye, like the red reptilian or like monster eyes, like full scleral contacts with the slits and like the big monster mouth and the claws and the like. That was... Wow, this movie really had a lot to do with my childhood.
It did.
Because when I think of monsters, like scary monsters, like the Beast is what I think of.
Yeah.
Especially because I used to see the video cassette at Blockbuster or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And you'd see, and on the front of the cover, it's, you know, Colwyn and Lyssa, and he's holding the glaive up, and there's beams shooting out of it. Behind them is this big fortress with the Beast's face on it, and the Beast's face is always a little scary.
Yeah.
I thought he kind of looked like a swamp thing.
I did, too.
Like he has
the mouth.
He had that open mouth.
Yeah, yeah. The almost like gills kind of thing across the face with like the little catfish tentacles. I was not as annoyed by the magician as you were. I mean, all the characters that they pulled together, except maybe the Cyclops, because he has to run in and save everybody's ass, felt kind of stupid and pointless. So,
I mean, Ergo the Magnificent.
Really, yes. Really, Kathleen.
Who is short of stature and giant of, like, he had a paragraph to describe himself.
Really? This was not the most annoying character that you've ever seen?
This guy? No. Okay. That I've ever seen? I'm sorry. Did you watch the movie we watched in December?
Let me counter that with this. Troy, would you like to play a game today?
Sure.
Our game today, ladies and gentlemen.
We're playing a game?
We're playing a game.
Okay.
The game is characters more or less annoying than Ergo the Mage. Troy, I have a list of characters here. Mm-hmm. You will tell me as I read through them, are they more or less annoying than Ergo? Are you ready to start this thing?
Do it.
Here we go. C-3PO.
Less annoying.
Donkey from Shrek.
Less annoying.
Twiggy from Buck Rogers.
More annoying.
Steve Urkel.
More annoying.
Ruby Rod.
Less annoying.
Willie Scott from Temple of Doom.
Less annoying.
Leo Getz, Lethal Weapon.
Less annoying.
Malik the Thief from Conan the Destroyer.
Didn't see the movie.
Oh, shit. Ewoks in general.
Less annoying.
Derek Zoolander.
Less annoying.
The fucking Transformer movies. All of them.
All the Transformers are way fucking more annoying.
Scrappy-Doo.
Scrappy-Doo, way more annoying.
Mr. Bean.
Less. He's about the same.
Tim Allen in general.
More annoying.
Barney the Dinosaur.
Way more annoying.
Snarf from Thundercats.
He's more annoying.
Nellie Olson from Little House on the Prairie.
Never watch that fucking show.
She's evil.
Flo, the progressive person.
Oh, God, more annoying.
Aunt Flo, just in general.
More annoying.
Bella Swan.
Who? That's from
who?
Twilight.
From fucking Twilight.
Oh.
She's awful.
The Verizon smartphone guy.
Ugh, more annoying.
And finally, Jar Jar Binks.
Way more annoying.
Yes, you win, sir. You got a 100% on your quiz today, even though I wasn't keeping score. Very good.
Thank you. Fuck you, Scrappy Dude.
Yes.
Yeah, Scrappy Dude. Who was that for? Like, who at Hanna-Barbera?
Millie.
True.
She likes Scrappy.
I swear she only likes it, though, because we told her that Scrappy's super annoying. So she's being, she's doing that, like.
Oh, the contrarian.
Yes. Like, oh, you think this is so annoying? Oh, I love it.
Oh, no, you don't.
Oh, you little
that's
monster.
Fine. She can say it now, because then we can just humiliate her with it later when she's older and realizes that that was
Scrappy.
A dumb thing to say.
You did.
Yeah, I'd be like, oh, yeah, you love Scrappy. You have no taste. I tell her all the time she has no taste. She gets so mad at me. My shows are good. No, they're not.
Yeah, no.
Well, I did like the Ergo's lines when he was saying that someone was dumb. I like that he said he had raisins in his brain case, which I thought was funny.
Oh, Ergo the Magnificent.
Yeah.
Short of stature, tall in power, narrow in purpose, and wide of vision.
But he changed that once or twice, didn't he?
No.
I thought he said, like, at the very first, he said, like, narrow of vision. And wide of
butthole or something.
Yes.
Oh, how long did I make it? I don't even know. That one just slipped out of the butthole.
I bet it is. Yeah.
I mean, he was just a character that I could pick on. Like, I didn't really hate him that much.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I wanted to punch him in the face.
He had the most
every single time he was on the screen.
He had the most lines interaction kind of thing because he was the first person that Dorothy picked up on her way to the Emerald City. But
you were there.
Yes.
And I'm gonna miss you most of all, Ergo the Magnificent.
Right, exactly.
You ever think that was kind of fucked up in The Wizard of Oz? Like when she goes to the Scarecrow, like, I'm gonna miss you most of all. Like,
she's known him the longest.
For like 5 minutes.
Well, the Tin Man's over there crying because he just got a heart and his feelings are hurt now.
Yeah, see, yeah. Like, I just waited until you got a heart before saying, fuck you, I liked him better.
Wow.
You tin fuck. Anyway, sorry.
So when we were watching this and they got eaten into the quicksand at one point, Troy was like, quicksand! What is it with 80s movies and quicksand? It's everywhere! And Pete sent me some kind of text about it, too. So I looked it up. In 2010, there was a Slate article that said 3% of films in the 1960s had quicksand in them. That was the heyday of quicksand
the
in
60s?
Movies.
In the 60s, huh?
Because 3% of movies had it in there.
That's a lot.
In the 80s, it was 87%.
Hey, take it up with Slate. I'm just telling you what they said.
I think there was
the Breakfast Club all started sinking in the town. I'm like, what the fuck? Why is it here too?
In the middle of the library.
Exactly. That does
pretty in like, pink sand.
You never know.
Nobody expects the Sandish Acquisition.
That's
terrible. Our chief weapon is surprise. Surprise and fear are two chief weapons. Yeah, I'm the guy quoting Monty Python. I'm that guy. So the prophecy. Okay.
Yes.
A girl of ancient name shall become queen, and she will choose a king, and that together they shall rule the world, and their son shall rule the galaxy.
Right, so would they give birth to Darth Vader.
I was going to say, Krull 2, Rise of Skeletor. Were they setting up the sequel? I mean, like, they just assumed, right?
I think they assumed there would be some sort of franchise.
Yeah, I think they were leaving it open. Yeah. And then $16 million later, they're like, no sequel for you.
Fuck that song.
Was that the total box office? Yeah. 16? Yeah. Oh, out of 40?
30, $40 million budget.
Oh my gosh. 50.
That was just box office. I mean, like, it hit cult status, I'm pretty sure. So it's probably recouped.
Its money back by now.
Yeah. I don't know what its international box office was either, but I'm guessing. Well, it technically was a British movie anyway, so.
Apparently, it won a Stinkers Award for the worst movie. It beat out Porky's 2 and Cheech and Chong's Still Smokin'.
In what year?
83?
1983. Oh.
I feel like 1983 was not exactly a banner year for awesome movies.
83. When did E.T. come out?
82.
Okay.
Pretty sure. And then Dune would come out in 84. When you said like his child rules the galaxy, I thought
there's
Dune.
There's a bad movie.
Right.
Like Muad'Dib. There's actually a Dune remake coming up.
Yes. By the guy that did Arrival and the Blade Runner redo.
Yeah,
right?
Blade Runner 2046, yeah. Yeah.
Those are both fantastic.
I never saw Arrival, but I liked the new Blade Runner.
You would like the Arrival a lot. Donna loved it so much that as soon as it was available, she bought it. Like, just being an EL teacher, and it's about linguistics. Like, it's a nerdy linguistic movie.
Right, cool. Yeah.
That was very cool.
But the director is Denis Villeneuve.
Villeneuve, yeah.
Yeah. And the new Dune movie, it has a pretty awesome cast with Jason Momoa.
He's so pretty.
He's awfully pretty, yeah.
Javier Bardem. Like, there's a lot of good actors in it. And I believe in that director, too, so I'm, like, excited for that. The original Dune, I think it's 84.
David Lynch,
yeah.
Whew.
Oh.
That also hit cult status, but...
Don't know.
Thanks.
Well, I do know why. I mean, it was a David Lynch film.
It's a David Lynch film, for sure.
And honestly, it was probably the most like plot for a David Lynch film. Like, it actually had like some kind of story from beginning to end, because they had some source that he's working with. I'm just thinking of, like, Eraserhead, where it's like...
What's going on here?
Yeah, what the fuck is going on?
Or the Naked Lunch.
Naked Lunch.
There's not a whole lot of movies you watch with a talking butthole. Hey, and... That's not a butthole joke.
That's a thing. That's an actual thing.
In the movie.
Yeah.
Speaking of buttholes, do you have another beer for us?
No. Yes. Yes. Two, actually.
Ew. Why is that the bridge? I'm not drinking that beer.
That was a bit abrupt, huh? I don't care.
Pete's good at segues. Yeah. Okay. Let's get another beer.
Who wants an orange whip? Orange whip? Orange whip? Three orange whips.
Good job, Pete.
Yeah.
All right. Now this is not an easy beer to come by, at least not around here. This is the Double Oaked Bog Beast from Rheingeist out of Cincinnati. Aged in both bourbon and scotch barrels, this whopper of a wheat wine ale emerges with notes of rich toffee, vanilla, oak, and subtle smoke, a delightfully deep quagmire. It's at an ABV of 12.7. And no IBUs. Yeah, 12.7. It's a
12.7. That's basically wine.
Yeah.
Kathleen and I both went like put this up to our noses, and we like in synchronicity. Synchronicity? That's not the word.
Synchronicity, like the album by the Police.
We were synchronized.
Wow.
It was synchronized. Like, holy shit. Ooh. Sniffing. Yeah,
smoke.
Yeah. The smoke and liquor.
You remember the last time we said something smelled like smoke? Pete said he was drinking hot dog water.
Hot dog water.
Or ham, which I'm not getting.
That is complicated.
Whew. Yeah, there's a woody smoke.
Oh,
there's so much going on there.
Pete's making faces.
Ah, that was an experience.
It's very scotchy.
Ah, yes.
Oh, yeah.
It's very scotchy. I'm channeling my inner Liam.
Oh, yeah, that's a smoky scotch. There's wood and smoke. I know what's happening to Pete right now. I know exactly what's happening to you.
Are you draining? The sinuses opening up
there? My sinuses are, it's kind of like eating horseradish.
A little bit.
Yeah, if horseradish tasted like delicious hickory smoked bacon.
I don't taste the pork. Thank God.
Yeah, that's a lot of flavors going on.
Yeah, but I guess there is a lot of other little things
scotch,
going.
Scotch, scotch, scotch. I love scotch.
It's surprisingly not as hot. Oh, no, there it is.
Oh, yeah.
Breathe out. Actually, this one's more in, but it's true. Like the last one, when Pete said breathe out, I was like, oh, yeah, there's a lot more liquor flavor. Like you could see the
fumes
coming out.
The flames.
But this is more, when swallowing it, you get it more.
There's a lot more to the after swallow. That's a terrible way to put it.
the finish?
That's the proper
word. After swallow?
The after swallow.
Ew.
What comes after the swallow? No, wait, I said that in the wrong order. Oh. I just grossed myself out.
Ew.
That took a second.
that was a joke grenade where it's like, throw.
Whew, that is not something that you drink a lot of.
No.
That is intense.
To me, it just tastes, it's liquor. Like, it's...
The fact that this isn't in a snifter.
It's very scotchy. It feels, you know, like you take 4, 5, 6 sips, and you're done. And you put the cap back on the bottle and you put it away for another day. And then you come back and have a little bit more, and you come back and have a little bit more.
Yeah, there's a campfire.
Yes, it's smoky. It's not... For a beer, it's probably the smokiest beer I've ever had.
And it's so forward, and it's I kind of love it.
I actually like it, too. I wish we didn't have as many events tomorrow going on as we did, because I might have a little bit more and then drink it over a longer period of time kind of thing, but...
Really? This is something that you would kind of...
Well,
willingly drink.
This much. You make it sound like you have to, slip me a Mickey or something. I mean, what the hell? Willingly drink.
Well, no, but, I would not have guessed that this would be a beer for
you. I have a very mild beginner's interest in scotches, because I've always liked whiskeys, but the nicer ones are too expensive, and I don't have time to build up the kind of tolerance that I would need. So I'd be flat on my ass whenever I would have any. So I don't
practice makes perfect, Kathleen.
I understand that, Troy Carlson. But
I have done a lot of the practice for you over 20 years of drinking scotch, so I can point you in the direction of a couple of bottles that are affordable. And they'll last you a long time.
Right. And that's what I'm saying about this is it's in that vein of a flavor palette that I like, but I'm only ever going to have a little tiny bit of it. Right. It's almost a shame that this bottle isn't a corked bottle.
Oh,
so that
resealable?
You could put a cork back in it and have it over a couple of days.
Because it is pretty good, but yeah, I couldn't do much at all.
I wish we had one more person here to share this with, because I think this little bit that I have left is oh my God, I'm going to struggle through it. Go get Millie.
That's a negative ghost.
How old would one be before being introduced to their first?
Bug beast, bio booster.
But yeah, aged in bourbon barrels and scotch barrels, which is funny because scotch is generally aged in bourbon barrels. So there's something very circular about this. Bourbon starts in virgin casks.
Circle of liquor life.
The circle of liquor life.
Something there.
Like in Scotland, there's not a lot of cooperages and not a lot of wood to go around. We have shitloads here. So they just recycle, because once you use a barrel for aging bourbon, it can never be used for bourbon again. So they just... Might as well sell it to a scotch distillery or whatever.
Whomever wants it.
And then the beer distributors buy it.
Scotch distributors, recently.
And apparently from bourbon distillers. So
that's interesting.
Whatever the case, this is a big-ass beer.
And this was recommended to you by...
the Perfect Pour people.
Again.
Yes, the people at Perfect Pour. I was just kind of poking around. I already had a couple beers on the counter waiting for me, and he just came up to me you want a beast? I'm yeah. Ryan Geist. Double Oak Bog Beast. This is difficult to find. I'm like, okay, well, sold. Give it to me. And then I looked at the bottle. It was 12.7. I'm like, oh, God. Maybe I shouldn't give this to the cast. And then I did, and here we are.
And you did.
And here we are.
And here we are.
I fully admit that I chose pretty high gravity beers for this evening because I wanted you guys to get loaded.
Happy birthday to me, Ron.
I kind of did. It's my birthday.
I feel ya.
Yeah. But no, you guys got to do stuff tomorrow, like do things with stuff.
I know. I'm sorry. It's cookie season. Anybody want some Girl Scout cookies?
Very. I bought my lot.
Crazy.
My paintings will be very interesting tomorrow.
Just like thin mints and
be like gray skies and like, fuck you. How do you paint fuck you? I can do it though. Light here.
Oh, I want to see you paint fuck you.
Watercolor fuck it.
Yeah.
So why does every villain's lair fall apart when they die?
The magic that holds the lair together is no longer holding it together.
Like their fortress, their lair.
It's like the beast is dead, and now the castle will fall apart. It's like, man, they're all.
I feel like that castle was an extension of him physically. Like, she was in an eyeball at one point,
and like a clawed hand.
Yeah, yeah. And the scene where, and you kind of referenced it in the 6 minutes, and I don't remember exactly what you called it, where she's like running through like the white tunnels.
Oh, they all look like a Georgia O'Keeffe painting?
Yeah. Troy thought they looked like the set from Dr. T.
Yeah, that was very, okay.
Seussian?
Yeah, a little Seussian.
Like a Seussian.
It was very artsy. Like that part of it was very fanciful, and like they obviously let their imagination run wild. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of this movie that looked pretty cool. The slayers, like especially when they're rising out of the water,
yeah,
as they're going across, that was a really cool scene. I was like, oh, there, that's good, that's really good.
I thought the spider web was cool.
It took,
the
spider took too long, but
it
yeah,
took
it was
way
cool.
Too long.
That's most of this movie.
Everything like, takes too damn
like,
long.
They didn't have to go back to the glaive cutting open the dome to get Lisa out three times.
No,
like just do it once. We get it. It takes a little bit. Like, that ride across the desert on the fire mares.
Over
like,
7 minutes
for
long.
For fuck's sake.
It was over 7 minutes long.
Oh, yeah. What did I call them? I called them the fire reindeer horses.
The Clydesdale.
Yeah.
Yes, but then they did fly in the air like Santa's sleigh.
Because they were going, that's the only way they could get there fast enough.
With dude, Santa would be like badass with some big Clydesdales on
with fire coming out of their hooves.
Or at least fire reindeer. That'd be pretty sweet.
Right?
On metal, on axle, on Dio, on.
That's pretty good.
Oh my goodness.
Where's on Ozzy.
Danzig's in there somewhere, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. On Glenn. Instead of Rudolph, it's Glenn.
No, Ozzy would have the glowing nose.
Oh, yeah.
Probably, but I just, for Danzig being this like, oh, I'm Sharon! Danzig. It's like, the fact that his name is Glenn.
Glenn like, Danzig.
You can't have like a less name than Glenn.
How about Bob?
That's probably why he acts like he does.
No, even that.
It could be like Chaim. That's what's his face? From Kiss?
Gene Simmons.
Gene Simmons' first name is Chaim.
Really?
His name is Chaim Witz.
Yeah.
I did not
and
know
see,
that.
When he became a rock star, he became Gene Simmons.
Yeah, and if there's one thing that Gene Simmons knows how to do, it's
marketing
himself.
Yes.
Oh, shit. Yeah. I watched a bad movie with Kiss in it when I was in high school.
Is it the Phantom of the Park?
Yes, that's the one.
That's hard to find.
Oh, that movie's terrible.
It's probably on YouTube.
It might be.
Yeah, probably by this time. So my one, like, I think my biggest... What in the hell when it comes to the storyline in this movie is the old Lissa killed her baby.
Oh, yeah.
Her rage needed a victim. I was like, no, you deserve to be eaten by that weird clear spider. What the fuck, lady? Yeah, like, that just didn't even make any sense. And that the guy was like, you killed the baby?
Whatever.
Well, that sucks. And then that was it. I was like, what? He was, you know, I was like, hey, he was your son. Like, aren't you supposed to be enraged because it was your son?
Yeah, there was a lot to unpack in that scene. Like, oh, the Widow of the Web. One, okay, there were lovers at one point. Right. Two, her name's Lissa, which is the same as the
Hoon. Well, because she's the ancient name. That's where Lissa, a name that is ancient.
Right. And then we find out that they were lovers at one point, that she had a child of his, and that in a rage because she could not be with him, she killed it, and then she was imprisoned in the web.
And she basically couldn't be with him because he had to go to work. Bitch, get a job then. Like, I just didn't understand. Like, I was like, what?
You could be a weaver.
Control the spiders.
Well done.
Another thing that wasn't really explained all that well is apparently the only thing keeping the spider from killing her was the hourglass.
The hourglass, yeah, because those were the moments of her life or whatever.
Right, and so she turned it once. It could only be turned once. It was too much in such a short period of time. Yeah. It was hard to digest.
Yeah, well, and he had to get back across the spider web that had an inconvenient bell attached to it. So, you know, he couldn't sneak in because at some point the spider attached a bell to the web.
All spiders put bells in the
web. But he had to get back across holding the stuff and get all the way back to his people because then he would lose all that sand and then that's when he would die.
Yep.
Stupid movie.
Yeah. That's the part you didn't believe in?
No, I didn't. I was mad about the pointlessness of killing the baby. Like, that was just a sentence that just didn't need to be.
That was a scene that didn't need to happen.
Yeah.
I thought it was a good kind of closing of his story that she was the girl that he had been with and her name is Lissa and that, you know, blah, blah. Okay, fine. I don't know.
That was one of the scenes that I always had the most trouble with as a kid, just like trying to put it all together. Because you
what
get
the fuck is happening here?
Yeah, when you get a lot of shit gets thrown at you at once. Yeah.
Yes.
Also, yeah, it was kind of a little heartbreaking the second watch through for this podcast when I realized like, oh no, this movie really sucks. I still love it. I don't know when I'm going to watch it next.
I did a lot of fast forwarding the second watch.
Yeah.
Because I knew that there were these stretches of travel time or climbing time or web crawling time.
I think this is a common theme with a lot of the movies in our podcasting history. Like, get the fuck to the point.
Get to the point. this one bored me a lot.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of those travel scenes were made so long is because, like, at the time, this is probably a special effects sort of spectacular. It was, you know, very grand. Like, a lot of these effects were, at the time, pretty cutting edge. So to see a line of fire going across the sky as they ride these fire mares across, you know, like, makes bitchy. It feel epic.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I don't think they needed 15 minutes of watching a guy climb a mountain.
No.
But, like, I know that a lot of it was probably made to make the movie or the world feel much bigger than it was.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Because, really, if you cut all that shit down, it's probably a 45-minute movie.
And this, the, let's say, cinematography, or do I just say landscapes, it was absolutely gorgeous. This was beautiful.
Yeah.
It was as pretty as I've ever seen. It was just gorgeous. The lighting, the landscapes, the mountains, the valleys, everything like that. It was just wonderful.
Yeah, even the sound stages, I thought those were still cool. And even the map paintings. I thought the map paintings
were gorgeous. Yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, that whole swamp scene was, did I read right that it was in the large 007 bunker?
Yes.
At wherever they filmed 007?
Pinewood Studios. Yeah,
yeah, that's right.
The one thing that I did like, and I without reservation, was the music. And
yes. Did you? I made a comment about the music in the very beginning about how it was like the full orchestral. Dun,
yeah. Dun. Well, the moment it started and that first fanfare started, I'm like, that's James Horner. I know it. I would bet $20 that's James Horner. And sure enough, like at the rolling credits, James Horner music, like, of course it is.
You knew James Horner from before? I don't know James Horner.
You don't. You know James Horner.
I do.
Yes.
What else would I know him from?
He has done like Aliens. Anytime you hear like brazen, horn forward, sweeping orchestral stuff, it's probably James Horner. He did like The Rocketeer, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, which is the big one. You know it.
That was.
As soon as it hits, you'll know it.
Yeah.
James fucking Horner. Dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun. I mean, if you're going to go into a music career and your last name is Horner, I think that's your only option.
Yeah, it'd be a bummer if your name was James Triangle.
Or if your name was James Horner and you were super into guitars.
But yeah, when I first heard that fanfare, I'm like, yeah, this is way too sweeping and heroic to be anything but James Horner. And sure enough, there it is.
Yeah.
Sort of like if you hear...
John Williams.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just unapologetically heroic the whole time. You're like, I kind of want to go slay monsters now.
Yeah.
Or rescue a princess.
Just name your characters better. Name your characters better.
And give them more than a wedding. to get to know each other. I mean, like,
they knew each other
in the biblical sense.
Yeah.
They worked very hard to save one another, and it's like there's a lot of fish in the sea, man. I mean,
there's not. There was one other girl in the entire fucking sea,
that's true.
And she was the other Lyssa.
Very good point.
Not including when they were waiting for old dude to come from the web. And, like,
and there's all of Liam Neeson's wives.
Yeah, one of his wives, right. And like an assistant who ended up being a fucking one of the creature monsters anyway.
Yes.
Yeah.
With the black eyes and the...
Yes. Well, because he could like possess from a distance, I felt like.
Yes, weird.
Because there was one of the things that I wrote when the seer was trying to envision and the big hand comes up and like snaps away the thing. I was like, Thanos is in this movie.
Maybe we should rate it.
You think we should rate it?
Let's rate it.
Sure.
Okay, let's rate it. Okay, so see if I can do this right all in one go.
Okay.
One breath.
No, not one breath. You know what fucking I'm going to do in one breath?
Oh, God.
I do that to try to show the kids why punctuation is important.
We are your good mood movie nuts.
Wait, why is it coming out in one tiny exhalation? Maybe I should say tonight. It this time since you've had to say all
the
other
stuff. Right.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And I just hand it off.
And I did the intro and all
right,
that stuff.
Right, right, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, somebody else do this shit.
All right, I'll do it. We here at Good Beer Bad Movie have a rather unique rating system, and that is the 6-pack rating system. The idea is the more beers that you have to drink, the less you enjoyed the movie. So if you're watching some piece of shit like the Delano, you're going to need 6 to 600 beers. Where if you're watching something like The Incredible Shrinking Woman, you need 0. So in the realm of 0 to 6, or 1 to 6, if you just like to do the customary beer for cheer kind of thing.
The courtesy one beer.
Courtesy one beer. How many beers does it take for you to enjoy this movie, Troy Carlson, had you not had to watch it on Crackle as well?
Yeah. Yeah, that... Because Crackle...
Crackle adds a 6-pack to it.
Yeah. Yeah. But honestly, this is a rare 2-beer movie. Like, I don't think it was necessarily a 1-beer movie. It wasn't good, but it was not unenjoyable. I totally enjoyed it, and I like, give me a couple beers to just enhance the enjoyment and rock on. I'm pretty happy with it.
It doesn't have to be a good or a bad movie to give it a high or low rating. It's just how much do you need to enjoy it?
Well, I need more beer to enjoy a bad movie.
This is true.
If it's a good movie, then beer is less required. I mean, like, there are movies that would like a good Ben Stiller film.
Do they make those?
I really enjoyed Dodgeball personally.
I did too.
But
Empire of the Sun is not a vehicle, but he's in it.
He really? Is? I don't count that as one of his.
But anyway, there are several movies that, honestly, I kind of enjoy. They're good, but like beers would go well with them. It's like food pairing. But it's
so. But for this movie,
2 beers.
2 beers.
2 beers.
Okay.
All right,
Mr. Quint.
Wow, those are such some strong beers,
I know.
Too.
It's 5 for me.
Ooh,
5.
That's kind of a high rating.
It is so boring, and the hell is this guy's name? Ergo, I wanted to punch the screen every time I saw him. I couldn't follow the story. I'm like, why is the Cyclops dying here? I don't remember what that's all about. And I rewound it, and... Nope, I still don't know why this is all about this. And it took so long to get to anything. Climbing mountains, walking, the fucking horses, 7 minutes of horseback riding. 5. It, and I was stone cold sober and I wanted 5 beers so bad.
All right. Birthday boy.
Yes.
How many beers do you need to enjoy this movie?
Ooh. On each viewing.
On each viewing.
You watched it twice.
I did.
Yeah, I did watch it twice. So I'll give an aggregate score, but first viewing, 0. Good on time!
Thank you! Sorry.
Second viewing, 2.
So 1 beer.
1 beer for this movie for me.
Really?
I have a lot of associations, and there's a lot of nostalgic value in this movie for me. So I fully 100% acknowledge that this is kind of a crap movie, but it's my crap movie.
Right.
So
right. It's the movie you love from your childhood, and it's hard to extract those things from each other.
Yeah, and it's not something that I really want to extricate. Like I can look at the movie from a critical perspective,
right?
But just because it's crap doesn't mean I hate it.
Right.
And I like the movie, so I'm giving it one beer.
All right. I am three beers for this movie.
Three.
I was definitely bored. I clearly completely lost my desire to have any kind of attention to it because I didn't even realize that horse scene took so long. So, I must have been not only blinking with my ears, but my whole brain must have shut off at some point because, like, you guys keep talking about how long that took. And I was like, I mean, I remember them kind of chasing those horses around trying to catch them. And then the next memory I have is them flying across the sky. So if all of that took more than 2.5 minutes, I like blacked out for 5 of it or something. So
if you're anything like Donna, like as soon as she starts losing interest, like she just goes to disinterested double screening, like something's playing on the TV and then she'll be on her phone and like kind of glancing up, but she's not in the movie anymore. She's wherever her phone is.
Yep. I definitely am completely guilty of that.
There was
sure.
some emoji blitz going on to the left of me during this movie.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, we watched it, like we said before, on Crackle with the just insane amount of commercials. And then it was time for Millie to get ready to go to bed. And we're super close to finishing the 5th Harry Potter book. So, of course, we had to take a pause and go and read that. And so then I'm like, have a masterpiece in my hand and I have to come back to Flying Horses on Fire. I'm obviously going to stop paying attention to the movie. So, but overall, I did not find the magician guy. He was not the Jar Jar Binks of this movie to me. He was annoying, but not so. Like, I was just like,
he was the C-3PO. He wasn't the Jar Jar Binks.
Misa, turn you into goose.
Yeah, no. I don't know. I mean, I think he was supposed to be comic relief.
He was totally supposed to be the comic relief.
Totally.
And it's like, oh, they just forgot to make him funny.
But for me, it was three beers because it's a good idea. And there is a story in there somewhere. It's just not well told. And there's not enough of it. And a lot of overacting. And I need three beers to lubricate over that overacting.
Though I went looking for good... I was like, are there any good lines from this movie to like...
One of the bandits has a pretty good speech about fame. I thought that was good. Fame is an empty purse. Count on it, you're broke. Eat it, you go hungry. Chase it, you go mad. I was kind of like, oh, those are kind of some not too bad wise words.
Yeah, but they were
somebody could
there.
Pretty that up and put it on Instagram and write a book about it.
Okay. It was very purple prose. Very like they were trying to make it very haughty, and it was being delivered in a B movie, so it kind of comes off as weird.
Yeah. The movie came out at a time where you needed to make fantasy spacey because it's post Star Wars. And that's what they tried to marry.
Yeah, I have a feeling that it's probably started off as straight fantasy, like terrestrial fantasy, even if it's on another planet. And then with the popularity of Star Wars, they're like, can we make part of it in space somehow? Like,
right. Some three-piece suit at the studio had a note.
Yeah. Or like, can the Slayers shoot lasers? Like, right. Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
And so they shoot lasers.
Yeah. We'll give you another $1 million. Okay.
You're not getting that back.
Legitimately.
Ever.
All right. So we have 2 for Troy, 5 for Pete, which is surprising to me, 1 for me, and 3 for Kathleen.
I think this is the most like apart we've been. Yeah.
Yeah.
For a while, and at least anyway.
So Kathleen, with the little bit of voice I have left, can you tell our listeners now, yeah?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
where they may find us and yell at us and tell us we're stupid and
yes,
et cetera. Don't tell us we're stupid. Give us constructive criticism.
There you go. What do you want me to say? Oh, yeah. You want me to tell people how to find us. So please. If you are interested in reaching out and contacting us and telling us, you know, how much you like me and how annoying the boys are, whatever, you know, I mean, you can have your opinion.
Wait a minute. I just caught that.
You can email us at gbbmnpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at that same complicated set of letters, or you can find us on Facebook and or Instagram at Good Beer Bad Movie Night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There may or may not be a picture of me singing that ridiculous song for going over on the six pack. For going over on the 6 minute synopsis. 12.7%.
Yeah. Yes, yes, they were. So I don't have a film picked out for next month yet. So it's going to be a surprise.
I never have ideas.
We have a list of things we can get through. So for yes. sure. So yeah, April's going to be a mystery month.
Cool.
Keep eye out on the Facebook page for what we're going to do. And if you want to, shoot us an email, just like Kathleen asked. So folks, until next month.
I am Troy the Magnificent. Short in stature, tall in power, narrow in purpose, and wide of vision.
I feel like you should have tailored that more to be about you.
Wide and ass.
Oh, mean!
Short in penis, wide in waistline.
That's
short in
mean.
Length, wide in girth.
Narrow in eye width and...
Eye width?
Eye spacing.
My water bottle, water
Your
bottle.
Your water bottle.
My water bottle, water bottle.
Welcome to episode 30. No, fuck it.
The Good Beer, Bad Movie Night Podcast. The podcast dedicated... Well, it was way too...
That's terrible.
Like, hey, due to a botched vasectomy, I only have 30 minutes to live.
Welcome to episode 35 of The Good
in
Beer...
In the damn mic.
Well, we're going to start off with the 6 minute synopsis.
In the mic.
We're going to start off with the 6 minute...
And the frosty adult beverages that help make them tolerable. Tolerable? We're hot mess. Okay.
We'll then take a quick break and come back from this evening's choice with this choice. This is why you do it.
Look at me. I'm Pete. I lost my voice and can't do stuff.
Fuck off.
All those Godzilla impersonations. I have to interrupt you before you even start because your shirt has come unbuttoned. Your belly button is staring at me.
Hello, Captain.
She found Captain Winky. The wrong Captain Winky. And the frosty adult beverages that might help them.
Fuck
me in the butthole. Okay. All right, I'll sing the song. No recording, please. We're already recording, I guess. Yeah.
So, Dave, let me talk to you how a podcast works.
What sorcery is this?
Microphones.
I am angry that I have to say.
We're not doing something where you're going to get arrested.
What are you talking about, guys? Dicks?
Ew.
It's been at it for a while because it's all red.
Ew. 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 Oh, here. Do you want to borrow my readers? I brought
yourself.
Mine.
Go fuck yourself. All y'all with hair, can you just go fuck off?
There's a little Hannibal Lectery there.
Yeah.
Honey, what are our lumber needs?
Hey, you woodchuck, stop chucking that wood.
Yeah.
Opposite day.
Down is up. Up is down.
Yeah.
I pee out my butt and poop out my pee hole.
Oh, jeez.
It was an urban legend that the guy who invented the toilet was named John Crabber.
Yes, well.
It was Alan Shitstain.
British movie.
Fuck those guys.
I'm sorry, what?
Brits.
Whatever.
Where they're putting everything on toast.
Gesundheit.
Gesundheit!
I was literally sitting here thinking, how come you're not screaming it at Dave? He's the one that makes you do this.
It takes a pretty special guy to make me feel sexually threatened, and he's not even in the same room. I'm like looking at my wife like, stop. You don't have to look so intently at him.
All right, you know what? We're going to watch something else.
Change the channel or watch something else, and it ends up being Henry Cavill. I'm like, God damn it! Pete can transition.
Our brain is addled by cookies.
Oh, Rheingeist.
You mean Rheingeist!
Oh my God.
I can see it now. Like, Troy, we're supposed to be painting a bowl of fruit, and you just wrote the word fuck you over and over and over again in different colors. Yes, no. So, Dave's unavailable. He's currently violently throwing up in the bathroom.
Follow me! Follow! Robin Hood!
So we here at Good Bad... Zero or one beer means you really enjoy the movie and don't need any beer in order to enjoy it.
A rating of six beers means you have to have an entire six pack, so conceptually you must be completely inebriated in order to tolerate the movie. So, Kathleen, what would you rate this movie from 0 to 6?
Oh, I'm not doing that.
I'm so impressed and distracted by
why you're supposed to do it all like this.
Beer heals all.
That's
beer
right.
Does heal all.
I don't get my gas at a sit go. I get it at a stand stop.
That's so stupid. Dumb.
I'm gonna give you such a pinch.